John Lee Cox, University of Maryland, and I'm just going to talk to you today about some work we've been doing with Green Roofs with as an outreach of our SCRI Minds project. Some of you may remember Alyssa Starry, who was a PhD student who graduated last year. She's now at Portland State, and I'd just like to acknowledge Whitney Griffin, who is also on this presentation. Whitney's just graduated with a PhD, now working for Furbish Company in Baltimore, as well as Brooke Belanier, David Cohenbash, and I'm the lucky one who gets to present. Unfortunately, Alyssa and Whitney couldn't make the meeting. So what the challenge is with green roofs and urban stormwater is really what we're dealing with in many urban areas is the densification of urban areas, and particularly housing, and left-hand side is Baltimore, beautiful downtown Baltimore. But what we're really doing is dislocating the water cycle in urban areas, and impervious surface is probably, I'm not sure what it's like in your area of the country, but in Washington DC, Baltimore, Philadelphia, it's really becoming a driving issue on urban development. And in fact, we've just had a law passed in Maryland which requires all new buildings to actually retain 1.5 inches of any rainfall on site using a variety of mechanisms. So, of course, when you're building, this is just to give you some numbers on runoff. The previous slide just gave you that percentages, those are obviously very general numbers. What we're trying to do, though, is actually quantify the amounts of runoff that do occur, and more importantly, quantify the, because there's a lot of green roofs that have been built in these urban areas, varying efficiencies, what we're really trying to do is understand what green roofs actually do to reduce impervious surface. Green roofs, if you're not familiar with them, are a mitigation technique that is rapidly taking off in many areas of the country. Started off really in Chicago, has rapidly spread to the eastern regions, and these are two pictures actually from Stuttgart on the right, and I forget where the Kunsthaus is. I think it's in Vienna, actually Vienna. What the ultimate outcome of this situation is that for a town like Washington DC, they're wrestling with being able to reduce the amount of impervious surface runoff into combined sewer outlets. And the yellow in this slide is really showing you the extent of the combined sewer outlet in Washington DC. I'm not sure if you can see it, but these little red dots here right along Rock Creek Parkway, which is actually one of our green trailways into the Potomac, and these red dots here, those represent combined sewer outlets. So every time it rains more than about an inch in an hour, basically what happens is all the stormwater dumps into the sewage system, and there are 420 of those combined sewer outlets along Rock Creek Parkway and also along the Anacostia. So what Washington DC is doing is in fact building the system of tunnels, this one here up in northeast DC, and this one along the Potomac. The bill on that is $4 billion. So what they are doing is, because they are being fined by the EPA for any discharges to the Chesapeake Bay now, basically Washington DC because they can't retrofit all of these pipes back into the CSO and make it basically a modern city, they are increasing this capacity to retain this combined sewer discharge and then pump it through Blue Plains, which is the big, huge sewage treatment plant at times when there's excess capacity to do that. So how Washington DC is basically funding this work over who God knows how long is that they are charging residents. Basically, this is 11,000 square foot, so you don't have to have a huge amount of impervious surface to pretty much ratchet up a pretty high, and it's not a tax, folks, it's a fee, a fee for impervious surface, and that is a monthly fee. So that's quite a lot of money that is actually going to actually pay for these tunnels. So that's the economic imperative on green roofs. What we're trying to do is understand what green roofs do for us. So this is where we're fitting in. Retrofit of actually green roofs is actually quite difficult to measure. So if you've got drain spouts like you have here in this particular green roof, you've got to retrofit some interesting devices to be able to actually measure runoff to any degree of precision. And if you ever know of a hydrograph, you know that often hydrographs have a very long tail on them, and it's that last third of the tail which is actually at about a millimeter per minute. And so to get that kind of resolution, you actually have to have a pretty high resolution pressure transducer or something in there to be able to do that. So just to back to where Alyssa was this last year, what she did is she worked on a predictive model to actually estimate green roof runoff without actually having to actually measure this. So we measured the runoff off of her platforms. I can send you those papers. But basically what we've been using is the array of sensors to be able to actually measure the biological components as well as the substrate components and actually get to a predictive model. It's simply a simple water balance model. So we're rainfall in, system removal to get to runoff. And basically that what we're doing is a modified Penman Monteith, and we are combining that with soil moisture data to be able to actually get to this system removal. So very briefly, what we use is the EcoTM system to do this. We actually put EcoTM arrays out in the soil substrate, and we measure that to be able to what we call antecedent soil moisture. So between rainfall events, what we're doing is measuring the actual differential between essentially field capacity and some measure when the next rainfall occurrence happens. And by being able to do that and look at the Penman Monteith data, we can then get to a point where we can actually get this into a system where we can actually start analyzing the data. For those of you who are not familiar with our system, we can use a variety of Decagon nodes. These are actually, we're using, what I'm going to describe is just using the EM50G nodes. Those actually transmit data off of roofs directly to a cloud server, and we're pulling that down to a local computer actually in my office to be able to actually link in with the SensorWeb software that we've developed, and then we can actually do the model implementation from once we have the data. So just to give you a couple of case studies quickly, these are very new, and we just wanted to illustrate some of the work that we are doing. One of the roofs we've just instrumented in February is the NASA Building 12 at Johnson Space Center. This is a nice collaboration between the National Renewable Energy Lab, NASA, and ourselves. And basically what we've done is we've put in an array of sensors on the left here, basically in this portion of the roof. Unfortunately, what we don't have is we don't have the drain gauges and we don't have the verification data. But just to show you numbers that Alyssa just worked up from her model, basically to date we've had 497 millimeters of rainfall in Houston for an approximation of 461,000 liters in that roof, and we've retained 332 millimeters at about a 66% efficiency. What I'll, for full disclosure, show you is that because this is some data that we get off of out of SensorWeb to be able to show you the rainfall data, but I just wanted to show you exactly what the sensor data is, and you'll notice these blips. Just to go back and show you the rainfall data one more time, these are rainfall events, but it's like, well, what are these? Well, fact is they're irrigating this roof. So when we first started, they were irrigating it three times a day, just like you would a good turf system. We actually got them to back off to once a day, but actually what you can see is, in fact, that even these once a day irrigations are maintaining that antecedent soil moisture at virtually field capacity. So what we're really trying to do is actually get them to really back off the irrigation of this green roof because it's affecting performance. So even though we're not actually measuring runoff at this point, and so we can't really say that we're actually getting this runoff because we're not measuring it, it's just by subtraction, we're hopefully at least advancing them forward. The second roof that I do want to show you, just to show we're continuing this work with NASA. In fact, we're probably going to instrument a roof in Cleveland this fall, and that roof we might have the ability to actually put some actually verification some of those pressure transducers in their drain gauges. So that's how they irrigate, basically as Ed described on the time clock. So. Second case study is Potomac Plaza. This is a roof in Washington, D.C. This is actually a apartment complex, and this is the one that Whitney is actually monitoring. This has just gone in. It's just been actually literally in April or May it was established. You may just recognize the edge of this building. We always wear our NSA t-shirts when we're up on this building because that's the Watergate Hotel. And so what we do is we're monitoring again with EM50Gs. This is the installation. They've actually got a rock wall base, which is a hybrid system between a rock wall and crushed brick and gravel. It actually forms a very nice matrix for green roofs, but of course crushed brick and gravel doesn't hold much water, hence the underlayer of rock wall. So just to we're doing very much the same as we're doing monitoring on the Johnson green roof, but just to show you some data from the Potomac Plaza site. This is where we are not irrigating this roof. This is roof is not being irrigated, and so these are actual events where these are rainfall events. We're well ahead of the game in terms of rainfall this year in Washington D.C., particularly in June and July. So this roof is actually these are the data that ECA-TM data as opposed to rainfall. So again, just the summary numbers on that. We've had a large amount of rainfall in Washington so far this year, a lower efficiency, but this one we're wondering, again, we're not actually measuring the downspouts, so, but this is the predictive model. There is some slop in this model, I must admit, and so we're basically refining the system and working on getting the ELISA's predictive model to a point where we can verify it. And just to lastly, we're actually going to be working with the U.S. Botanic Garden to actually have a verifiable roof in the near future. So with that, I think I'm probably over time, but I'd be happy to take any questions.
You have 2 minutes.
2 minutes. Any questions? Okay, I cede my time to the next... Jane.
That's mostly steam on the roof, right?
It is. Yes, both of these roofs are sedum.
How rapidly does that transpire?
Good, very good question. Some sedum do not transpire very much at all. Sedum album is what we call our survivor, and basically it's sitting there in cam. So it's a great weed management specialist, but it doesn't do anything to move water. What we'd really like to do is get to zonal management, irrigation management on roofs, because I think if we can get to zonal management, James, and we can kind of get beyond lead, we can actually start putting C3 species up on these roofs, because it's the C3 species which are our engines that are driving our water use. So basically we've got to think of these roofs as living systems that are machines that are just literally trying to drive that water down. We can get it down to a set point where we can actually irrigate to keep it alive, but minuscule amounts of water to maximize the stormwater potential at any time. So we can really maximize the stormwater benefits of green roofs.
Well, you know, I understand green roofs are great at reducing the heat island effect, but as far as storing water,
Well, actually, Lissa did show with her PhD results that actually there is a benefit to plant species, even sedum. So Kamchaticum is actually pretty much a workhorse. Kamchaticum actually is sex cycles between C3, and it spends most of its time in C3, even at relatively low water potentials. So some sedum do work. We could do better, I think, though. And so this gives us an idea where we can actually inform design, right? And that's the thing. If you can't inform design without data. So, you know, that's...
Thank you.
we'll keep you posted.
Yeah.
Sure. Thanks.
Thank you.